Blog Talk Radio.
There will be days that just go wrong. Make you wanna holler and shout. Hands up in the air, wondering what it's all about. Mm-hmm. When you think that things can't get much worse, in a second, oh, everything just goes south. Keep on keeping on, whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. God's grace is gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside. Road ain't alone. Keep on keeping on. Stand in your way.
They're always saying,
always saying what you cannot do. Mm-hmm. Don't stop chasing your dreams and working hard to make them come true. Oh. And if it ever gets you tough, just remember. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. With God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside. The road ain't alone. Keep on keeping on. Keeping on, whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. I beg you one better time. With God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside.
This is American Sovereignty Radio here on the Contending for Truth Radio Network. And are we in for a great show tonight, folks? I am excited. It means a lot to me to see young people involved in politics. I'll tell you the main reason. I fight everyday politics because I got three nieces, 5, 8, and 12 years of age. And I do everything I do because of what this country is going to be like in 40 years, in 50 years. I want to see them to have the exact same freedoms that I've got. I want them to be able to go into their house of worship and for the preacher to be able to say what needs to be said. And I don't want them to be harassed. I want them to be able to have the freedom of speech. I want them to have the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, the Third Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, all the way up. I want the federal government to be staying out of their lives. That's why I fight. I want the judicial system to be the same. So I get really excited when I see especially young people getting involved in politics. And let me tell you, folks, we've got a young person this evening who's not just involved in politics. He's running a statewide campaign. And we're not talking about Rhode Island, Dan, a little tiny state, or New Hampshire, or even a mid-sized state. We're talking about the giant state of Texas. Colton Buckley, we had Sid Miller on last week. We're always enjoyable to have Sid on. And Colton Buckley is Sid Miller's campaign manager. Him and Sid go way back. We'll talk about that in a little bit. So we're excited. Colton's got some great news. He's got a great resume. And we are looking forward to having some real good political discussion with Colton. And with that, you know, This is Parental Sovereignty. This is American Sovereignty Radio. And we do this because we firmly believe in local sovereignty. We believe in individual sovereignty. We believe in the sovereignty of the family. We believe in the sovereignty of the county and the state. And we believe in the sovereignty of the federal government. We don't want to see stuff that should be the federal government's passed up to the UN. We don't believe that the stuff that should be stuck at the state level should be passed up to the federal government. And I want everybody to stay out of my daily business. So it's American sovereignty. With that, we've got Dan Wilson is with us tonight, our co-host down in Florida. Looks like we're going to wait on Jennifer Montrose a little bit down in Alabama. She is in Louisiana right now. We talked last week a little bit about Tony the Tiger. Jennifer is trying to save Tony the Tiger right now in Louisiana, so she'll probably pop in with us in a little bit. So with that, Dan, I'll pass it to you for your opening remarks, and then I'll bring it back, and we will introduce Colton Buckley.
Well, thanks a lot, Scott. You know, this has been a busy week already. It's only Tuesday. And some major things have been happening politically. Yesterday we had, the governor of Louisiana made the first major step of returning to true freedom for the right to bear arms. And our Second Amendment rights, it's nice to see states starting to turn around and go away from what's been happening. We had a setback on our First Amendment with Duke University. They went around and put a list of things you could not say on campus. Like you couldn't ask a woman whether she was married or not. Now, this is stupid. I mean, the students for that are at Duke should stand up and say this is ridiculous. Yet Duke University went and decided the First Amendment didn't mean much to them. And they made this move. But overall, I think, you know, we're seeing the pendulum starting to come back. And it's good to know that, we're having younger people involved. You know, as people my age, we're kind of getting to the point where we've been fighting a fight for years, you know. I go back to the Jimmy Carter years. I was born when Eisenhower was in office. So it's been a long time, and I've been arguing politics since 1969, since the Nixon-McGovern race. And, I'm starting to slow down, and it's ready to turn it over to the younger generation. It's nice to see people, the younger people getting involved, because they're our future. You know, we have to pass the reins over. As us, you know, older folks are hitting retirement age, and we can't continue, you know, keep the fight going for 40, 50 years. We need people, younger people, who have the same beliefs as we do, who are willing to really take it out there and, you know, fight for our Constitution, and they understand the importance of our Constitution, where it came from, and what our forefathers did to make this country happen. It's a very, very important thing to pass down. You know, we need to pass that down from generation to generation. And unfortunately, my generation kind of blew it because we didn't do it well, pass down the information well enough. And people, our country has kind of lost its way, but it's nice to see it coming back again. And with that, I'll turn it back over to you.
Well, and I just have to agree with you, Dan. You know, you and I have a common love for Ronald Reagan, a sincere adoration. And I started getting involved in politics when I was about 12, 13, started paying attention because my grandmother inspired me and Ronald Reagan inspired me. And I had a picture of Ronald Reagan on my wall. I cut it out of my history book. It was a little, about 8 inch by 8 inch picture in my history book. I cut it out and I put it on my wall. And some of my friends kind of thought I was nuts. But I've had a love for politics and a love for current events. Then now I'm over 29. I'm getting older, and so it's good to watch and see what's going on. And let me tell you, since I've moved to Texas, I've been enjoying politics a whole lot more than I did in California. Michael Smith of Conservative Nation Radio told me I would, and I had a kind of funny feeling I would. I did not quite know I was going to have as much fun as I am actually having right now. And so with no further ado, we're going to bring in Colton Buckley. The name Sid Miller is familiar to most of our listeners. We like to talk about Sid. He's a good man. He's a sincere candidate. He's not what I call a premium candidate. He's a good guy. And Colton's known Sid for a long time. So, Colton, we want to welcome you. We want to just kind of have you give a brief kind of a bio of what you've been doing the last few years. You've got a great, impressive resume that just recently you added to it the regent for the Texas A&M system. I don't even know if I'm saying that right, because I really don't even understand what a regent really does. So if you'll go through and just kind of give us a rundown of what you've been doing, kind of a quick bio, who you are, and end with, explain to us exactly what a regent is and what he does and does and what the responsibilities are that goes with that.
Well, thank you all. Thank you, Scott, for having me on. My name is Colton Buckley. I'm 19 years old. I come from a cattle ranch family out of Gatesville, Texas, North Fort Hood area, the spur capital of the world, population of about 17,000 folks. It's also got nearly all the maximum security women prison units. So it's a church pew, bar stool kind of cowboy town. I've been involved in Tea Party and grassroots politics as long as I can remember. My folks will tell a story. In 2000, in the presidential race, I was in kindergarten, and I guess I got pretty upset, and there were maybe more than a few tears dropped when I didn't know who the president of the United States was going to become due to this little issue called the Hanging Chad that has political professors still talking about it to this day. When I was 14 years old, I'd say I gave my very first kind of impromptu speech at a Tea Party rally in Amarillo, Texas. I've been actively involved with different candidates from school board all the way to Congress. This election cycle, I've focused on one campaign. I'm the campaign manager for a longtime mentor, a longtime ally of mine, Sid Miller. As you know, and many of your listeners know, Sid Miller is the former House of Representatives member for House District 59. He's the first Republican to hold the seat since Reconstruction in Texas. He got elected in 2000, left the House in 2012. He's the front runner for Agriculture Commissioner. We placed first out of five candidates, spending less money than any other serious statewide candidate in Texas in the GOP 2014 election cycle. Just last week, Governor Rick Perry, the great governor of Texas, appointed me to serve as the one student regent on the board of regents for the Texas A&M University system. Basically, what the A&M University system chancellor and the board of regents do, they're kind of like your commissioner's court here in Texas. They're in charge of hiring and firing of the chancellor to lead the system, hiring and firing a university president, approval of budgets, approval of tuition regulation or fee increases, and then buildings and expanding the system. My appointment's a little bit more interesting than others. So I'm out of all the 11 or so universities that we've got in the A&M system, I'm the very first from Tarleton State University, which was founded in the 1800s and was the first sister school of A&M. I'm the very first. So this is the very first time Tarleton State University in Stephenville, Texas, the cowboy capital of the world where I live now, actually has a seat at the table on the Board of Regents when it comes to a student region. I'm also the last student regent, you know, Aggie kid to get appointed by an Aggie governor. Greg Abbott, I foresee, will sweep and knock Wendy Davis, down in the race in November. And so we'll have a governor who's from the University of Texas. Or if a tragedy happens and Wendy Davis is elected, we'll have a governor from Texas Christian University, TCU. So I'm the very first student regent ever from Tarleton State University. I'm the last Aggie regent from an Aggie governor. I'm also the youngest appointee of Governor Perry, who's the longest-serving governor in Texas history. And I think from what I've heard, there's been some calls in the Texas Historical Commission to see if I'm the youngest appointee of any governor in the history of this great state. So my job, I don't count quorum on the Board of Regents, and I don't have a vote, but what I do have is a voice. You know, I represent, I'm the most premier, I guess, and top student official within the entire Texas A&M University system, which is comprised of a network of 11 universities, 7 state agencies, 2 service units, and then a very well put together and comprehensive health science center. My job as student regent is to be the voice for over 130,000 students and then reach another 122 million people through service each year. With more than 25,000 to 30,000 faculty and staff in the A&M system that span all over Texas, my job will be to represent them on the board. I don't have a vote, but I am very humbled and honored to have the opportunity to serve the people of Texas, my fellow students, faculty, family, in the A&M system, and more importantly, the taxpayers of Texas in the public university system. So I'm happy with what I'm doing. I love being on the campaign trail, and I appreciate y'all having me on.
Well, and you know what, you're staying busy, that's for sure, I'll tell you. And in the middle of all that, I do know that you're catching and killing snakes that are taller than you are. You're staying busy. And you know what, it is an honor to be appointed to anything by a governor. And it's also a huge honor for a young person to be a campaign manager for a statewide campaign. Now, over the last few years, as Dan and I and Jennifer, who's with us, we'll pass it to her for a minute for some opening remarks. We've gotten to know a lot of campaign managers around the country, from small campaigns of supervisors to large campaigns. We know the campaign manager, Herman Cain's campaign manager, Mark Block, and it's a busy, busy job, and it's a hard job. And for somebody at 19 to be running a statewide campaign, and I know Sid Miller well enough now to know that he's got full confidence in you. It's just an incredible thing. I want to pass it to Jennifer for a few minutes, give her opening remarks, and then we'll come back. Colton, and I'd like to talk a little bit about the campaign, how Sid's doing. Give Sid Miller some airtime this evening to talk about that. So Jennifer Montrose, are you still in Louisiana, my friend? Jennifer?
Yes, I am. I'm still in Louisiana. I'm in Baton Rouge.
And how's it going down there with Tony?
Well, let me tell you. We had Senator Ward, who sponsored the bill. The situation is that the Tiger Truck Stop has been raising tigers at their truck stop for 26 plus years. And now all of a sudden the wildlife and fisheries has made a big issue. And they want to take Tony's tiger away from him. They want to take Michael Sandlin's Tiger away from him, Tony, and they want to stop him, prevent him from being able to raise any more Tigers at all. And there is Big Cat Rescue, who's involved, this animal activist. He's got the facility for this tiger is bigger than what you would find for Mike, the tiger at LSU. And this particular location is even bigger than some of the ones you see at the zoos. He gets the best of care, and he's actually overweight right now, so they're looking at having to cut back on his diet and such. But one of the issues is Senator Morrill, M-O-R-E-L-L, out of New Orleans, got up on – we were at the Senate floor yesterday, and he had some serious propaganda that he passed out to everybody, which was blatant lies. And he was trying to make it appear that Tony was living in a very small cage. And, you know, we know that not to be the case. So we have some serious plans to do our homework, you know, so that Senator Morrill doesn't get an opportunity to run again and be a, you know. So thank you. So anyway, so, you know, we're going to be doing some things. We're hopefully going to really make an effect in the with this case. We're going to have to go back in and do some things that we and expose some stuff that we haven't that they didn't know about this last time. But we only lost by 2 votes.
Oh, wow.
So we're looking at coming back next time armed with all the facts so that when they try to do anything to expose any of this negative stuff, then we'll come back with the truth. So with that, I'll pass it back over to you, Scott.
And Jennifer, if anybody can fix this situation, they've got good leadership. I know my buddy Jennifer Montrose down there in Alabama can do this. So we're looking forward to keeping track of that. And so we'll go back. And Colton, I'd just kind of like you to kind of tell me your experience working with Sid. Give us some of your background with Sid. You did a little bit. And talk to us a little bit about the campaign, how the campaign's going, what our listeners can do, especially those here in Texas, to help you out, to help. We've got a primary coming up on May 29th. I'm fully confident that that is going to be a runaway. And then we start the big campaign towards November. So I'll just pass it back to you to just kind of talk a little bit about Sid.
Well, yes, sir. So I grew up in Gatesville, Texas, Coryell County, which is basically the North Fort Hood. It's comprised of all Fort Hood, the largest military installation in the free world. I've actually got an uncle that's stationed there that's ready to go on another tour to Afghanistan. I believe in July he heads out. So if y'all keep him in your prayers, I definitely appreciate it. I've been with Sid a long time. Sid was elected in 2000, the very first Republican since Reconstruction to beat incumbent Democrat in this seat. When he was elected, I was in first grade, and so there's actually a picture that my grandparents still have of a newspaper copy they've got somewhere that has Sid Miller's picture on the front with his iconic white cowboy hat and stars, elected as our new state representative. And on page 2, there's a list of me with a bunch of other folks on the AB honor roll for Martin Walker Elementary there in Coppers Cove, Texas. And so it's a pretty neat thing. Ever since then, I've followed Sid. You know, you have a lot of folks, a lot of, you know, children who take heroes and put them on their walls and have posters of people like Superman or Batman or football players, et cetera, or wrestlers. And I had a picture of Governor Perry and State Representative Sid Miller for a long time. Sid, I've met him numerous times coming through different speeches I've given, different speeches he's given. To my school and in political activities. And when he decided, he announced he was going to run for Commissioner of Agriculture to run the Texas Department of Agriculture, the second largest agency in the state. He called and asked me if I'd be willing to take a semester off of school and work for his campaign. And I ended up being the campaign manager. I didn't know I was going to fall in that spot when I first got on, but I've enjoyed it. And I've been with Sid with about 10 hours after he announced he was running for ag commissioner, and I've not left his side, and I don't plan to. So things are going well on the campaign. You know, like I said earlier, we, out of any serious statewide candidate for statewide office in Texas on the Republican primary, we spent the least amount of money and got the most votes. So on this statewide race, we had one establishment incumbent opponent spend $1.7 million of his own money, of his own family's oil and gas money to be elected ag commissioner. The voters have repudiated that guy twice before when he ran for the state house. They did it here again in a county, you know, a state that has 254 counties with Sid Miller, if not winning outright or leading, and nearly 200, if not over. You know, we only spent about $81,000, which is crazy to think the massive size of Texas and the electorate. But it's all about the grassroots, as Sid said before, in interviews with y'all and interviews and articles with other publications. We run a tight ship. Pretty much it's me and Sid as campaign staff. In the primary, Sid was on one side of the state, I was on the other. And then we had, you know, a couple volunteers, et cetera, in the office managing that for us. And now that we're in the runoff, we've got Sid going a lot of places. I've gone back into the office mostly to take care of campaign strategy, et cetera. And then I still go out and make a few speeches. But, you know, as y'all know, Sid Miller's was former chairman of the Agriculture and Livestock Committee, which has direct oversight over the Ag Department. I think that's very crucial, and that's why I went to work for Sid, because Sid's the real ag guy in this race. You look at any of the five candidates that were in the primary, and it's easy to sell Sid because Sid's authentic. Sid's the real deal. He's a 9-time world champion cowboy. He's farmed and ranched his entire life, and there's a proven record of it, and he has a consistent record in the state house. You know, and then you go into the runoff with him and Tommy Merritt, a former state rep also from East Texas. And what a lot of people don't know is there's, my personal opinion, Tommy Merritt must have something personal against Sid Miller, because when Sid's Democrat incumbent opponent ran in 2000, it was candidate Tommy Merritt who was at the door shaking hands with Democrat lobbyists to donate to the Democrats. When J.D. Sheffield ran in 2012, Tommy Merritt, a former Republican state representative, sent him a check. And that was one of Sid's opponents while he was in the House. And so, I mean, Sid Miller was consistently ranked one of the top three most conservative members in the entire Texas legislature during his over a decade tenure in the House. And former Representative Tommy Merritt from East Texas was ranked the most liberal Republican, the only Republican to vote against the voter ID law, which has gotten so much national attention. He's just a, you know, Sid's the real guy, and like you say, Sid's the premier candidate because Sid's authentic. You know, Sid's an elder in his church. He helped build the church here and founded the church here, the Cowboy Church of Erath County, right outside of Stephenville, Texas, the cowboy capital of the world. We have more world champion cowboys come here than anywhere else, and we have the proven record. We're the only candidate in this race in the primary that had all the conservative endorsements. Started with the Young Conservatives of Texas, an organization that's been in the state since 1980. And as we've talked before, a lot of your key campaign managers behind the scenes and even current candidates are Young Conservatives of Texas members or alumni. I founded the chapter, YCT chapter here at Tarleton State University, and serve as the chapter chairman. And, you know, a major thing with us that's different with other campaigns is we have a slim staff, a tight budget, like you see all of your conservative candidates across the board this year. Your more established and moderate candidates are well-funded and have old war horse staff, as I would call them. They've been around the block a time or two to get folks elected to Austin. And then you look at more conservative candidates from Dan Patrick to Ken Paxton to Wayne Christian and Sid Miller, who have younger staff that are dedicated but are well-known in grassroots areas of Texas and can advantageously use social media to their benefit. And I think that shows clearly when you look at the percentage rate that were found on March 4th, and I believe the same thing May 27th in the runoff will have the same results arrive again.
Well, and I have to agree with you, and I'll tell you, he is authentic. And, you know, Colton, Sid Miller's in a good group of candidates, and those are the candidates that I choose to bring on my shows. I'm a solid conservative. I'm a firm conservative. Socially, sovereignty, economically, I'm a conservative. But that's not enough for me and a candidate. I've got to know that when that candidate gets to office, they're going to be the same person as they were when they were campaigning, and that comes down to character. So solid character is just as important to me as being a solid conservative. And Sid is, he is authentic. And I'll tell you, we've got Michael Smith sitting in the chat room right now, and I want to just say a couple of things that he said. Number one, you know, he says something that I feel, Colton. We're all tired. Hey, we're already to pass the reins to the young conservatives for sure. And, you know, and he says also something about we need to have some Miller folks on Saturday at 9:30 a.m. at TCGOP, oh, Tarrant County GOP. So we'll bring Michael on. We'll talk him into calling in a little bit. Michael from Conservative Nation Media, Conservative Nation Radio, my good buddy. We started out at the same time on Blog Talk. We were good friends during the Herman Cain campaign, and I love him dearly. I give him a great big shout-out. It's amazing to me how many times we end up with candidates in Washington, D.C., or in our state houses or in different areas, and then they fall apart onto us. I often talk about Bob Cork the Dorker up there in Tennessee. You know, at one time was a good conservative. He's been there a long time, and he didn't have the character to hold out. But Sid Miller has got the character to hold out, and he's proven that. I'll tell you, Colton, when I first started looking at Sid, and I was talking to the few friends that I had down in Texas while I was living in California, they all said the same thing. They basically all said the exact same thing, and that was what you see is what you get with Sid. When he gets into office, he will do what he says. He'll stand up for principle. And the first time we had Sid on, he described to us the difference between a politician and a statesman. And a statesman is somebody who will get up and do the right thing no matter what. And Sid is a statesman. And with that, I want to pass it around to Dan and Jennifer to ask you some questions, Colton, get their take on what's going on. So I'll pass it down to Dan. I'll let you have a little bit of dialogue with Colton, and then we'll pass it to Jennifer. In fact, Dan, I'll just let you pass it to Jennifer when you're done chatting with Colton. And then I'm not quite sure how long you've got with us tonight, Colton. You're more than welcome to stay the whole show. After that, we will talk a little bit about political issues and just have some good old-fashioned discussion. Folks, this is Contending for Truth Radio, our American Sovereignty Show. As I always say, I want you to picture this as we're sitting in our living room, sitting on the couches, just having a good old chat. That's what this is all about. We just happen to be doing it from different living rooms. So with that, I'll pass it back to Dan. Dan, let you have some questions with Colton.
Okay, thanks a lot, Scott. Seems like all of us have got involved in politics at an early age. I got involved in back in 68 with the McGovern Nixon race, and I remember fighting with my teacher and having her scream at me. She was a bleeding heart liberal. And even back then, I was a conservative. I've been a conservative all my life. And politics, I was more involved in just being a regular individual. I didn't really get involved in politics. I was more into competitive sailboat racing, and that's where most of my life was spent, about offshore on boats, and I've seen a lot of places. When I came back, I found a different country, and it really made me get involved in politics and say enough is enough, and it's time to stand up. And that's what got me going, and especially during the Herman Cain campaign, when I saw the first person I've liked running for president since Ronald Reagan, who was one of my heroes, and you know, then been involved ever since because really we dropped the ball as the Republican Party. And, you know, we have these rhinos who are running the damn GOP, and they're choosing the absolute worst candidates they possibly can. And they are not finding solid conservative people with a backbone who are willing to stand up and fight for what is right. And that's what got me involved in the grassroots movement. And, you know, but I know that, well, I'm pushing towards 60 now, and, you know, I have a bad heart, and it's not going to be many years before I'm not going to be able to be involved anymore. So it's nice to see people like you, Colton, coming in and picking up the reins for us and, you know, working with Sid. We had the opportunity, meeting Sid, you know, a few weeks ago on the show, and, you know, man right after my own heart. And, you know, it's nice, as I said, it's nice to see people like you getting involved. And, right now in the college scene, how are you seeing other students? Are they leaning to the left or the right? I know that most of the universities, the teachers are far left. I found we were running into that problem back in the 70s when I was in college. And but we had some pretty solid base of conservatives because we were coming right out of Vietnam at that time. And today, do you see a stronger conservative movement on the college level, or are they still more towards the liberal end?
Well, let me back up there and talk about how I got started. You know, I give a lot of speeches across the state, from El Paso to Longview, Amarillo to Brownsville, and hit every town in between that I can. And a lot of folks said, Copen, you know, you're 19 years old, you're about to be 20. And I've been giving speeches statewide since I was 16 years old, once I got my driver's license and could roam around this great state of ours here in Texas. And they asked, how'd you get started? And it's simple, and I've never, your listeners tonight, and y'all will be the first ones to really ever hear this, but I was born in August of 1994. My parents were fresh out of high school. They weren't married. They weren't engaged. After my father found out that my mother was pregnant, he left. And so I was raised by a single mother and my grandparents and my maternal grandparents. And they raised me upright with the true values of hard work, reliability, honesty, and in the faith of Christianity. In 1999, I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, a very severe illness. Back then, it was called juvenile diabetes. And with that, I could never, you know, growing up as a kid, you were always into G.I. Joes or joining the military. But once I was diagnosed with diabetes, you know, right a week or so before I started kindergarten, you know, I knew that I could never join the armed services and I could never serve my country in that capacity. And so I eyed the political cycle, the public process, what was on television, the 2000 race with Governor W. Bush getting elected President W. Bush, Sid Miller get electing my state representative, and then shortly after that, I had a baby sister born, and then, well, and 9/11 happened. And being around North Fort Hood, I think that's what struck me. You know, a lot of people look at my generation as the handout generation or the iPhone generation or the me generation. And the folks in my geographical area and kind of that mindset, I look at us as the 9/11 generation, because I will never forget the actions taken by those who hate everything that's instilled in this country, that this country was founded on, that folks have fought in this nation and on foreign lands to preserve what folks in office and folks like us in the grassroots are doing so hard to preserve. And they wanted to destroy that. And that was instilled in me, you know, in second grade, that there are folks out there that hate us just because we have the freedom to be who we want to be and that we're not controlled by a mindless, self-serving government. And after that, I've always taken the esteem through history and social science courses, et cetera, and then beginning in grassroots politics to get involved. And I think the same issue we have with young people getting involved is what we have with apathetic communities. It's the fact that people will watch what's going on TV and they're so disillusioned by the madness in Austin, Texas, or the madness in Washington, D.C., where everything seems to be so self-serving, where someone comes into your district and sends a mailer and says, I'm a conservative, and then they go down to the Capitol and they sit in that luscious office and they don't vote the way that they said they're going to. And the issue we have with the youth is the same thing we have with folks who have died out of the political cycle and no longer go out to vote. It's because rather than just complaining about what's going on and what the news is covering or not covering, we need folks, young folks included, to turn off the TV, get on your feet, and get involved. And that's exactly what I did at such a young age, and I'll continually do that to my dying breath because I have a fear that my children and my grandchildren will have the worst enemy of all, not from a foreign threat, but from an internal threat in this nation where they do not understand what being an American citizen and being a proud American really means. And I see that as a very serious conflict that our nation's facing as a culture. You know, and I brought up my past and what's driven me, you know, being raised by a single mother and my grandparents and having this illness, but tackling what I needed to tackle and fight the statistics, because that's what the liberals want you to do. They want folks like me in Anglo or African American or Hispanic or Asian American communities and neighborhoods to take that government handout, to take that government subsidy, to add to that statistic, and to sit at home and do nothing. And I decided not to. I decided to fight the measure of what the government has kind of instilled with folks in this Democrat majority. You know, if you look in the 20th century when we had a strong stream of Republicans elected to office and conservative Republicans like Ronald Reagan, like George W. Bush, our numbers went up. Folks went back to work. As we see here in Texas under Governor Perry's model with the conservative legislature that we have, businesses are moving here by the droves. Families are coming here every day to move to Texas because this is a bootstrap state where it doesn't matter how you grew up, what your skin color is, or how much money that your parents have to pay in taxes every year. It's about the fact that if you want to succeed and you want to be a proud American or a proud Texan, you'll stand up and do what needs to be done in your family, in your community, in your church, and to help your state and your nation. And that's one thing I've been driven to do. Now, when bringing it back to the final point, when it comes to college campus, in all honesty, it depends on where you are. I go to a rural campus, Tarleton State University. It's got roughly around 10,000 students in Stephenville, Texas. It's about an hour and a half southwest of Fort Worth. We have a pretty conservative group, but it's because it's in a family setting environment. We're a premier student-oriented university here in Texas. And so we've got more pickup trucks than gas cars in the parking lot. We've got more Dodge Rams than we do Priuses. They've all got cross stickers on them. They've all got NRA stickers. And we have folks who are devoted to keeping the rural heritage of what this nation was founded on and what will continue to be the backbone of this nation. You go to more urban areas like maybe Dallas-Fort Worth or Austin or Houston or California or New York, et cetera, and you'll see a more liberal agenda placed there. So it really just depends on where you're at. And this country needs a little bit of both the common debate. But, you know, one thing that I also want to add to that is, and Sid Miller said it best once at a forum we were at out right outside of Houston right when the campaign first got started. The future, and I'm quoting Sid here, but the most important resource we have in Texas and even in the United States is not agriculture, it's not oil and gas, it's our Texas youth. And I believe that because youth is what's up and coming. The youth is what's going to rise and take over the positions we're at with our church leaders, with our school teachers, with our college faculty, with our city councilmen, with our school board members, with our governor, and with our president. And it will be my generation and generations that were just before me and right after me that will come forward and have to have this gauntlet. And they must be reinstilled in what this nation was founded on. The Declaration of Independence needs to be reintroduced in schools. The Constitution and the Bill of Rights needs to be reintroduced in schools and retaught because it's missing. Nothing needs to be changed. It needs to be read verbatim. Nothing needs to be removed. You know, I've seen a lot of things in Texas with SBOE, the School Education Board. They're in charge of all the textbooks, seeing how some textbooks have removed different versions of the Second Amendment or altered things, and I think that's ridiculous. That's not what this country was founded on. You know, I tell folks I grew up on a box of shotgun shells in the King James Bible, and I think that's what this nation needs to go back to, because until we restore the most influential documents that founded this nation, that brought men from different ideas and different wealth class and even different colors of skin together, this nation's going to continue to fall apart. And it's going to be my generation, by the guidance of y'all, to help us grow, mature, and move forward into the conservative movement so that we can continue with a badge of honor to show that our hard work and dedication will one day put this nation back on the right track. Because I have a fear now, and I pray every day, because this nation's going off a cliff, and it's going off fast. And it's only going to be my generation to turn it around. And so I ask for anyone listening now who has a grandson or a granddaughter or a son or daughter in their early 20s, mid-30s, in their teenage years, to turn off that TV, to get on your feet and get involved, because it's going to be you that saves this nation and allows prosperity to continue for my children, your grandchildren, and your great-great-grandchildren.
Oh, amen. I agree with you 100%. You know, I'm here for my four grandchildren. I'm nearing the end of my life. I have stage 4 heart disease, and I can go tomorrow or 2 years from now. But until my dying breath, I'm going to be fighting for this country as well. I was raised in the hometown where John Paul Jones lived when he was in SC. And I was raised in the beginning of our country. I've, you know, stood on Paul Revere's grave, John Hancock. Used to take my children over to the Longfellow's Wayside Inn, where the Midnight Ride of Paul Revere was written. Used to walk my dog around Walden's Pond with where Henry David Thoreau was. So I was immersed in history. And, you know, I knew what our forefathers went through. You know, my father ended up getting involved in politics. You've heard of the Pell Grant, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, the Pell Grant was written and passed by a good friend of his, Claiborne Pell. And so I knew politics from an early age. And, you know, this nation has meant the world to me since I was a very little child. And my parents, the son of immigrants, I mean, the grandson of immigrants. And my grandfather used to sit me on his lap and tell me about American history. And I agree with you. Today they're tearing it apart. The Constitution, the Bill of Rights, they aren't telling the truth about the Declaration of Independence. Said they were saying it's founded, this country was founded by a bunch of rich people. They don't realize that virtually every member of the signer of the Declaration of Independence ended up with nothing. four of them died in the Revolutionary War. One guy, one of the signers came home to find out his wife died 3 weeks earlier. 2 weeks after that, he died. There were many, many sacrifices to create this nation, great nation of ours. And, you know, I was like you. I was raised with Christian values and the patriotic spirit. And I'm not seeing that. And I want my grandchildren to have what I had when I was growing up. And I want my future generations that they're going to have the same liberties that I had and grew up with. And they need to know the sacrifices made by our forefathers in order to keep and maintain this country. Ronald Reagan, who was, as Scott said earlier, was one of my heroes. I went to the Reagan Museum, library, I mean, and I voted for him twice. And he, it was an amazing man. And, you know, but it seems that everybody forgot about what he was and who he was. But Reagan was a true patriot in every sense of the word. Grew up, you know, he didn't fight in World War II, but he did a lot of the movies in Hollywood to try to support the troops. And one thing he said when he was in office, he said, freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. And boy, was he right, because we're right on the edge. And these next two elections are going to count whether this nation survives or not. And we need people like you to fight for it. And I really, really appreciate that you're picking up the ball and taking over from where we left off. My generation, we came from a lot of wounds that came out of the 60s. Three assassinations. We had a war where 60,000 Americans died. And it was a war we never belonged in. I didn't protest against it, but I believe our legislators of that period of time, the nation started going downhill after the Johnson administration. Reagan gave us some hope, but ever since Clinton administration has been on a downhill slide, and people are trying to change the history of our nation. They're trying to change why the Second Amendment was written, the state sovereignty. And we need the truth to be passed on. And it's nice to see people like you doing that. And I hope you can convert more people your age into getting more involved and, to save this nation, because it is going to be up to you guys to save the nation. We're going to do our best until we can't fight anymore. It's going to be your generation that's going to save this country or lose it. And we apologize for putting you in that situation.
Well, yeah, and that brings me back to another, you know, we're talking about President Reagan. That brings me back to another quote of President Reagan, was that the American dream is not that every man must be level with every other man. The American dream is that every man must be free to become whatever God intends he or she should become. And I think that's an issue we see debated often in economics, business management courses on the college campuses here in the great state of Texas and everywhere around the globe, is that the idea of big government makes everyone get poorer. The idea of individual responsibility in the free market system drives everyone up. The liberals and large government supporters want to give you a handout. Conservatives and liberty-minded folks with a free market and a limited government want to give you a hand up. And the way to do that is through instilling what this country was founded on and the hard work that it got brought to bring here. You know, my family's I'm an eighth generation cattle rancher here in Texas. My family's been here since before the war of northern aggression, as we've gotten some flack on the campaign trail with Sid Miller for saying, or the war between the states. But I would like to be the eighth cattle generation Texas cattle rancher in my family, and I'd like to pass that down so that one day I'll have a great grandson, so on and so forth, who will be the 16th. Or the 20th generation Texas cattle rancher. And the only way that's able to be done is if we unite this youthful generation to promote the prosperity and the history of what this country was founded on. Because if you don't pay attention to what's going on, you're doomed to repeat it decades on down the line.
Exactly. And we'll pass it here in a minute to Jennifer to have a little bit of dialogue with you, Colton. And then we've got a special guest waiting in the wings to say hello to you and to contribute to the conversation. I do want to say this, Colton, because you brought up something that's very important and very dear to me. And you brought up the concept of hurdles. And any of our listeners who listen to us and have been listening to us for a long time, you've heard this before and you're going to hear it again. You know what, Colton, you basically said you jumped hurdles. And life is all about hurdles. You know, Adam and Eve, God gave them hurdles. And man is born and they jump hurdles and then we die. And there's two different ways of approaching a hurdle. You either jump the hurdle, and in doing so, you get stronger. If you're at a track meet, the guys that run around the track jumping the hurdles, the more hurdles they jump, the stronger they get. Either that, or you lay down and cry in front of the hurdle, or you go around the hurdle. I would like to say that the socialistic system, the left side, the democratic side of government, their idea is to have government take away the hurdle from you. But, you know, and this is Contending for Truth Radio. It's Bible-based. And you know, the Apostle Paul, he said in 2 Corinthians, he had a hurdle that he was facing. And he said he prayed to God three times to take it away, and Christ said, my grace is sufficient. And Paul went on to say, so I praise God for my hurdles. I'm thankful for hurdles because our hurdles, that's the only way we gain strength. That is the only way we gain strength. And I know a little bit more insight into why you are as strong as you are, Colton, because you've spent your life jumping some hurdles. And that's where we gain our strength, folks. If we don't jump those hurdles, we don't. And let me tell you, if we have a government that wants to take, and this is why big government doesn't work, this is why what we're talking about doesn't work. If we have a big government that takes away all the hurdles, then we have a weak society. We have to have the hurdles. Now, do I wish we wish more hurdles on us? No. Do I wish life could be easy for us all? No, not necessarily, because that's how we gain strength in character. And I appreciate you bringing that up, Colton, and giving us a little bit of insight into that, because it's important. It's exactly why you are as strong as you are. And you're a hurdle jumper, and you'll continue to jump hurdles. I'm confident in that. And I'm hoping someday I'll be Facebooking and tweeting for Colton for governor of Texas one of these days. I told Sid Miller that last week. And with that, Jennifer, I'll pass it to you for a little bit of dialogue with Colton, and then we will bring in our very special guest that's come in to speak to Colton tonight.
Colton, you know, one of the things that has been on my heart this last week is government overreach, especially when we saw what happened in Nevada. You know, and we have so much issue with the propaganda that's out there. You know, we've got so many issues with one of the things that they tell us is that Republicans are not good at going across the railroad tracks and talking to the other side, that there's no hope to bringing the other side over to vote their values. You know, I think that one of the things that is real important is today's generation, our young generation. I'm listening to I live in a college town, University of Alabama, and I talk to a lot of college Republicans that are involved and active, you know, and a lot of them seem to fall into this libertarian, you know, really moderate libertarian belief. And, I mean, that's, to me, you know, respect for life, respect for the Constitution, belief in limited government, belief in personal responsibility, you know, that's my four core values. And, you know, but one of the things that I'm seeing now is it just because how many college kids raise their hands to say, yes, I have read the Constitution? What do, you know, students really know about the Bill of Rights today? And, you know, so one of the challenges I think that we face is people get complacent and they think everything is okay or, you know, I'll deal with it next week. And we're finding that we have problems. Monsanto taking the rights away from the farmers. They take the seeds and make it so that they've got a patent on it and you can't replant the seeds. Farming in the old days seems to be a thing of the past. You know, we need elected officials that we're going to hold our feet to the fire and are going to do what they say, you know, once they get elected to office. And, you know, I admire you for taking on the task with Sid Miller. You know, he's a fine gentleman, patriot, you know, and we need more activists that are willing to get out there and get the, you know, the base stirred up and excited. You know, what do people say about agriculture commissioner? What's the big deal about that? That's nothing like governor or like running a congressional or Senate race, you know, but agriculture commissioner has a lot, you know, to offer. And, you know, we don't need to take that for granted. What are you finding to be your challenges since, you know, you've been involved that you've been able to overcome with your involvement with this particular race?
Well, the major thing is kind of being taken seriously. You know, I answer sometimes the campaign phone line or my cell phone, and somebody has to speak to Sid Miller's campaign manager, and that's me, and there's political activists throughout this state who have said, well, Colton, you're 19 years old, it can't be you. And I said, well, no, it is. And so the age issue is always something that is driven down in the political process. You know, we have younger candidates running for office, and folks say, well, they're inexperienced because they're youthful. Well, when a president, you know, back in the day was first elected, he had more knowledge and information of that office after serving the term in any office than he did when he or she first ran. And so I think that's a major detriment to our society is the way we kind of want to shortcut the youth just because of that number, yet that mentality and the advancement that our youth has today is so powerful. And I think that's a clear issue that was seen this election cycle in the Texas Republican primary was the fact that a lot of the younger campaign staffers, et cetera, were not taken seriously because we haven't been around often and we haven't shook hands and thrown our arms around lobbyists. But boy, oh boy, did those consultants get sick when they saw what the young guns did March 4th here in Texas and in other primaries across the nation. You know, another thing that's a good thing for me, I suppose, being Sid Miller's campaign manager, is in this campaign, for Ag Commissioner or any other office with Sid or a candidate similar to Sid, I don't have to sit there with a consultant or a group of the candidate's advisors and make up what our campaign speech is going to be or what our slogan is going to be or what we're going to stand for, because Sid is the real deal. Sid's pro-life, pro-God, pro-gun, pro-family, pro-military, pro-United States Constitution, and he's anti-Obama. And that's Sid through and through, and that's the same speech we give everywhere we go because it's the honest truth. The major thing that folks don't understand about the Texas Department of Agriculture is how vast it is. You know, with the vote count here in Texas, the majority of who's voting for Ag Commissioner is out of, you know, soccer moms and suburban area folks out of Plano and the Woodlands in the Houston area, not agriculture folks who have an invested interest. But the Texas Department of Agriculture is so large. It's the second largest agency in the state. Agriculture is the second largest booster to our economy next to oil and gas. And 1 in 7 people work indirectly in agriculture, with only 2% of our folks working with agriculture. The average age of a farmer and rancher, like Sid said before, is his age, right around 16. It's only getting older. And so we need more youth innovative programs and more youth-driven initiatives to make sure that our younger folks are going back into the service industries that we're pushing, into the higher education, but they also go back into your hard work, blue-collar jobs that their forefathers immigrated to this country to do, like be a farmer and rancher. Like I said earlier, I'm an eighth generation Texas rancher, and I plan to ranch in some capacity or another for the rest of my life. And so I think that's the major thing, is just promoting and instilling in the youth that they're important, and that they may not be old enough to vote, but their voice still counts. And I was well enough to have enough public servants and statesmen like Sid Miller around me during my rearing as a young man to fully understand that I may have not been able to vote until my first Republican primary this spring of 2014, but I've been able to be active with candidates and political causes to make my community, my state, and my country better for the last several years.
How are things with you guys going door knocking and getting out into the communities and the precincts and meeting with the constituents? What are some of the challenges you face that you've been able to overcome?
Well, the major thing is just, when we were in a crowded race with five candidates, it was making sure our name was known. But looking at the voting history and exposing that and showing that Sid is the true conservative, looking at his conservative lifetime ratings by Texas Right to Life, he's got 125.3%. From the Texans for Fiscal Responsibility rating, he's got a 94.3%. For the Young Conservatives of Texas lifetime rating, he's got an 84%. You look at any other candidates in our race, and they had numbers way below that. I mean, we are the clear conservative leader in the Texas House, and we're the clear agriculture guy. And so selling that in door-to-door knock-walking or working with tea parties, et cetera, has been quite successful due to the fact that Sid has a proven record. And we're the only candidate in this race, and especially in the runoff, to be endorsed by any conservative groups, any tea parties, and every tea party in the state that has endorsed in this election has endorsed Sid Miller. And then every agriculture group that's not liberal-backed has joined our campaign. The others have stayed out of the race. And so I think it's imperative to continue our message, which we're doing, with grassroots, block-walking, cowboy boots hitting the pavement here in Texas, to tell voters how important and how vital this office is. And the thing that really shocks people is the fact that the Texas Department of Agriculture is in charge of your school lunch programs. And I think that really gets your average voter who answers the door that didn't know that about Texas Department of Agriculture, and the fact that they have so much influence over agriculture education in the state. And the thing that really surprises folks is Sid Miller is the only candidate that was in this race in the primary when we had five candidates, and the only candidate in this race in the runoff who has a degree in agriculture. He's an honors graduate from Carleton State University. His alma mater is the same ag college university that I go to. And so I think him being a former ag teacher, FFA advisor, and 4-H leader just moves waves with folks in urban areas who are where our heavy voting population are but aren't too in the loop with what the ag department and what the ag commissioner is really in charge of. So I think the major thing, obviously, with any campaigns the same as ours, getting our message out there and getting folks known. We kind of got a leap ahead of that because, we had Ted Nugent come on early and sign on as our campaign treasurer, and I think we're the only candidate ever in the history of Texas, if not the United States, in politics where you've got to have that political disclaimer, the political advertising paid for by the campaign at the bottom of all of your literature, and we actually asked the printer to boost up and bold Ted Nugent treasurer. And I think that's something that really gets a lot of neat glances and wins us some votes.
Yeah, I used to live in Austin, Texas, back in the 90s, and I had friends that told me what it was like when the oil wells dried up. It's like one day everybody was going to work, and the next day everything was gone, and it was like a ghost town. And we have an opportunity now with, the pipeline, if we could ever get, the votes, just enough votes, right people in Senate and House, and get the president to, you know, sign with a pen. It just, I know that, you know, Texas has got a lot of good things going. I know that it's a, you know, battleground for a lot of people. I got a good friend of mine, Anita Moncrief, who moved into Houston to get on board with being a part of the battle there in Texas to try to keep it red. You know, I know we have some issues with Wendy Davis and some of the other progressives that are out there, you know, trying to make a change for the worst. And I'm glad to see, you know, that there are people like Ted Nugent that have been willing to come on board and help Sid. You know, we need more people that are willing to step out. Squeaky wheel gets the grease. We need those people that are not afraid to speak out, you know. And I think one of the things that that I'm really frustrated with, and what I got to see these last couple of days down here in Louisiana, is how easy it is for people in the Senate and the House to get bought off. It's like, well, you know, you don't do what we want you to do, and you don't vote the way we want you to vote. We're going to make it difficult for you. We have certain things that we can do that will make it hard on your constituents, and it'll make it difficult for you to get elected again. You know, so we've got to expose the corruption. I think it takes somebody that, you know, that's going to be out there as an activist to be willing to get their feet wet. You know, I have learned more, I think, being actively involved, boots on the ground, you know, being engaged and getting other people to join in with me. We did a lot of deployment for the primaries for Herman Cain and for Newt Gingrich, and we traveled to different states. You know, and it seems to be the same in a lot of places where people just are just really fed up with the way things are going. They don't see any hope. And we need people like you that are out there, you know, getting the base, people on the streets, getting the boots on the ground, excited to say that, yes, we can do this. You know, and don't let those people that try to tell you that you're too young for this, that we need older, you know, dogs in this hunt to make it happen. I will tell you some of the best activists I've seen are some of the young ones. You know, I've talked to Jan Morgan, and she's out there on the trail, you know, fighting for our Second Amendment rights, you know, and she's not afraid to speak her mind. We have a lot of younger generation, you know, that are learning from a lot of those that have been around. You know, but we've got to stick to our guns. Our conservative values seem to be, you look at television, they seem to be being lost. You know, there's just so much that has become so common now that, you know, you go into school and the thought of, you know, praying at lunchtime over your food, you know, it's much different today than it used to be. You know, and I remember where I was on 9/11. I was working home health, and I walked into a lady's house and saw the television and thought it was, I had no idea what was going on. You know, but today we have to be so careful. Our water supply, our food supply, Agenda 21 is, you know, alive and well. I mean, we see government overreach every day. Small business, IRS is, you know, infringing on our privacy and those kinds of things. So we need people that are willing to get on the front lines and fight to help get people like Sid Miller elected. So that I thank you for. Is you have anything else that's important that you want to get out there and let people out there know about?
Well, one thing I just want to hit on for your listeners with the Sid Miller campaign is a major thing. Go to our website, www.millerfortexas.com. Our Facebook.com/MillerForTexas and Twitter. Follow us, like us, and if you can, send us $5 or whatever you can do. If you want a yard sign, get on that volunteer list and ask to help us out. If you want a block walk for us, send us an email and I can send you some material. You know, this campaign's run by activists. It's run by grassroots activists all across the state, from the Gulf to the Panhandle, from North Texas down to the valley and the border. And so we need folks like your listeners and like y'all to continue the momentum with our candidate, Sid Miller, in this race and with other conservative candidates across the state and across the nation. We're being outspent $2 or $3 to 1 as all campaigns are when it comes to being the conservative grassroots-led candidate. We were victorious in the primary, and I think we'll be victorious in the runoff with your continued help. And I just want to give a shout-out and thank all of you and thank our conservative members of the legislature and the Tea Party activists and the church leaders that have gotten behind Sid Miller and gotten behind other conservative candidates to lead the charge to win the runoff in May, late May, win the general in November, and then get sworn in to be our future public officials and statesmen next January.
Amen.
Well, amen. I think Scott had a special guest he was going to bring on board tonight.
Yes, we do. And Colton, I want to tell you this. You know, I've interviewed Governor Perry. We've interviewed a lot of candidates on this show. We've interviewed Senate candidates. We've interviewed congressional candidates, Board of Supervisor candidates. And let me tell you, they can say all they want about your age because you are coming across just as well as any of those candidates. You're doing a great job. You present yourself well. And I'll tell you, if that's all they've got to throw at you is that 19, then they better go looking for something else because you're doing a great job. And, you know, I want to ditto what you said. Folks, if you can help Sid, please help Sid. Send him some money. It takes a lot of money to do this, and it's important. You know, we need candidates. We need a bunch of Sid Millers across the United States. And we've got a good handful of good candidates, but it's very important. One by one, we've got to get them into office. I'm a firm believer that the Railroad Commissioner race and the Agricultural Commissioner race are two of the most important races going on in Texas right now. I didn't realize that when I first moved here. I didn't realize the ramifications of these two races. But it's a great fight against the federal government that would really like to come in and take over Texas. We'll talk about this in a little bit, but the federal government's already controlling 40% of our water, and they want to get a hold of the other 60%. Well, I just moved from California, and I can tell you what happens when the liberals get a hold of the water. Because we've got a whole south end of the San Joaquin Valley that's a dried-up desert because the liberals decided that a bait fish, and I loved fish, but the bait fish needed the water more important than the farmers. So we've got to have fighters. We've got to have fighters like Sid Miller. So go to millerfortexas.com. You can find his Facebook. You can find his Twitter there. If you do nothing but do a few Facebook posts each day. If when you're standing in line at the grocery store, find a reason to bring up the conversation of Sid Miller. It's, you know, it's not that difficult to do. You know, hey, have you heard about that 90,000 acres there north up there at the Red River that they've been the federal government wants to take away from Texas? Just take it away. And did you know that it includes some land that the Boy Scouts have been using? Oh, you didn't? Well, let me tell you, man. Yes, Sid Miller's fighting it. Greg Abbott's fighting it. Have you heard of Sid Miller? Bring this guy up. Talk about it. You know, Jennifer Montrose, Dan Wilson, and I are all Frederick Douglass Republicans. We're Frederick Douglass Republicans because we believe, and our guest that's about ready to come in with us is also a Frederick Douglass Republican, because Frederick Douglass Republican, it requires you to go out and talk to people. Talk to people, folks. Get the word out. But if you can send Sid some money, do that as well, because it is important. These races are important. And now we've got somebody really special on the line, very dear to me. I'll tell you, my main connect to Texas for a long time before I ever moved here. The moment I found out we were moving to Texas, he was the first person that I got on the Facebook chat with, and I said, Michael Smith, guess what I'm doing? Moving to Texas. And he's been a valuable friend. He's been a person that I have, on many times, we've worked on different projects together. We worked on Team Kane together. And we've worked on, we jumped in there when you were helping Ted Cruz. Melissa and Teresa and I up there are helping Zach Poskovich. We just brought the whole team on down, helped push Ted Cruz, helped you guys push Ted Cruz over the edge. And since then, you and I met out at a gas station and had about 10 hugs in a row. I don't know what about the people in Fort Worth were thinking at the time, but it's been such a good pleasure to be down here with you, my friend. Michael Smith, Conservative Nation Media, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Scott. Thank you so much. That's a very kind introduction. Yeah, I think we brought over the whole Kane train over to the Ted Cruz crew at that time. But, you know, look, your big guest is Colton. Colton, how you doing, buddy? Jennifer, nice to see you or hear you. Dan, great to hear you. You know, Colton's been talking, and you know, obviously, aside from the fact of being the purveyor and owner of Conservative Nation Media, I am now the North Texas field representative for Wayne Christian. But I just wanted to back up some stuff that Colton was talking about and that you had mentioned, Scott. Agriculture and oil and gas are a Texas way of life. It's our lifeblood. I think Colton will agree. You know, I'm going to just give you a few quick Texas agriculture stats, and then I'm going to give some oil and gas stats. Texas leads the nation in cattle, cotton, hay, sheep, and wool. We lead the nation in the number of farms and ranches. We lead the nation in the value of farm real estates. We're a rural land, including privately owned forests, totaling 144 million acres, some of which the BLM would like to take and said we'll fight against. 12% of Texas population resides in rural areas. Our cattle industry equals $10.5 billion, cotton $2.2 billion, milk $1.8 billion. Agriculture is very important to us in Texas, as is oil and gas, and they really go hand in hand. And we have to have, I firmly believe, we've got to have a man like Sid Miller and Wayne Christian occupying their respective commissions that they're running for, Agriculture Commissioner and Railroad Commission, because we're going to have to fight the EPA, both commissions. We're going to have to fight the BLM, both commissions. You know, Texas oil and gas boom has attracted new residents. Our population has increased 20.9% from 2000 to 2012 to 25 million. Just to give you an example, and that's mainly because of the Barnett Shale and the Eagle Ford Shale. Just to give you a contrast, New York State, which is sitting on a huge natural gas reserve, which they won't dig up, has only grown by 2.2%. I think you live this in California as well, Scott. Texas has we've surpassed the oil output of Kuwait, which produces about 2.8 million barrels per day, Qatar, which produces about 2 million per day, and we're closing in on Iraq, which produces 3 million, and Iran, which produces 3.4, and there's a very good chance we could catch China, which produces 4.5 million per barrels a day. We've added an additional 300,000 jobs just over the last year. We've seen dramatic increases to our property values. Where I'm going with this is while we were sleeping today, listening to the news about Donald Sterling, the Supreme Court handed President Obama a victory today with his environmental regulation requiring states like Texas to further limit their pollution for what they call unhealthy air to neighboring states. Now, this is a fallacy. It's a red herring. Over the last 30 years, Texas has reduced its carbon emissions and its pollution by drastic numbers. But the left wants to continue to impose sanctions and regulations on states like Texas that are agriculture and fossil fuel-based with our leftist agenda. And these are job-killing regulations. So, Colton, just real quickly, buddy, if anyone has got anything to say about you being Sid's campaign manager, they don't get the Young Conservatives of Texas, which has endorsed none other than Dan Patrick for Lieutenant Governor, Ken Paxton for Attorney General, Wayne Christian for Railroad Commissioner, and Sid Miller for Agriculture. And there's a reason why. And these people, these young folks, yes, Dan, you're right. We need to turn this over to them. We're ready. You know, I've been fighting this battle since the Reagan Revolution. I'm tired. You can hear it in my voice. And we need these young folks like Colton and Jonathan Gaspard and other folks. You know, I was at a meeting with the Northeast Tarrant Young Republicans last night. Good bunch of youngsters. I'm excited about handing it over to them. And, you know, Colton, I apologize that we're handing to you a country that we have failed you on.
Well, no, I appreciate that, Michael, and it's good to hear you again, and glad you're working hard with Wayne. You know, I think for those that mock will learn. You know, you throw rocks at a glass house, and when it shatters and whatever arises comes up, I think that's something they'll have to deal with. I think, you know, being a founding member of the newest chapter of the Young Conservatives of Texas at Tarleton State University and serving as a chapter chairman, we had our state convention a couple weeks ago in Fort Worth, a nice 3-day weekend, and you basically saw a lot of key power players of folks who are 40 and under and a lot that are still in college and attaining their degrees or recently graduated and have moved to the Houston area or Dallas, Fort Worth, or Austin to work in the Capitol or work with members or with different conservative organizations. And I think we're the ones who are kind of turning the tide in Texas. We work behind the scenes. A lot of us aren't known. When you find out our ages, you wouldn't expect the much experience that we do. But I think we'll be moving forward. And, you know, I think a lot of my colleagues, so to speak, in the grassroots movement will one day seek elected office. Yet I tell a lot of folks I don't ever plan on running for elected office. I'm just proudly running for the future of Texas and the United States of America, and I'll continue to do that. But thank you for your kind words.
Well, thank you, Colton, for all you do. And look, buddy, not to put you on the spot on air, but the Patrick Paxton and Team Christian, we've got a shindig going on at TCGOP on gravel. I don't know. And Scott intends to be there. I'll be working for Wayne. But we need, you know, maybe it's Scott that needs to be there with material in hand for our smorgasbord for those four candidates this Saturday.
Well, good deal. I haven't checked the calendar yet. I did get your message earlier and saw some stuff about it. I'll have to get with Sid in the morning and see what we can do. You know, being an ag commissioner in the ag realm for the Texas Department of Agriculture and being an eighth-generation Texas farmer and rancher, I'll be doing politicking on my way to West Texas as I haul a couple trailers of cattle out there. So I won't be able
you
to make it,
but
I'll make sure everybody from the Sid Miller campaign is.
Well, if I need to drive down to Stephenville, I'm just right up the road. I'll get the material and get it there.
Well, and I'll make sure I get you some, so don't worry about that at all.
Thanks, brother. Scott, back to you. Thank you for having me for a few minutes. Scott, Dan?
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
I did that. You know, every once in a while I do that. I keep myself on mute on my phone. And I start talking, and nobody hears me, and somebody says, "Hey, Scott!" But I want to thank you, Michael. You're a dear friend of mine. Love you to death, my friend. I feel you're tired too, and I agree with you. I'm so glad that here in Texas, especially, it's very different from California. That's for sure. We do see a lot. Colton's not the only one. We've got quite a few young people that are really, really very active here in Texas, taking on, because we're just getting older, my friend. We're stooping over more and more and more. Pretty soon we're going to have these young people pushing us around in wheelchairs. So we appreciate you, Michael. We want to thank you so much for that. You know, Colton, I want to talk a little bit about issues here. And the big issue of the day, of course, is BLM and this land grab. You know, the federal government, and Dan and I talk about this a lot. We talk about this a lot on this show. In the summer of 1787, those founders spent a lot of hard work. In fact, a lot of them had to travel a long ways, and they didn't have airplanes and they didn't have motor cars. They had to travel a long ways in order to get to Philadelphia, and they sat in that hot room for those 2 months in the summer of 1787 putting together our Constitution. And the whole purpose of putting that Constitution together was to limit the federal government, literally was the basis of that document. And our federal government right now just seems to have forgotten that. And they are getting ready they have been trying for a long, long time, for decades now, slowly but surely, baby steps. But they really are getting ready to really start doing some land grabs from what I see all over the place. We've got 90,000 acres up on the Red River that it's been kind of been in dispute for a while. Haven't done anything, and all of a sudden they want that land. And they don't own a whole lot of land here in the state of Texas, thank goodness. Our wonderful Sam Houston made sure of that. We learned that last week from Sid Miller. We even own our coastal waters all the way out. The federal government doesn't even own any of those, which is something to be proud of. But, Colton, we're dealing with this BLM, so I want to kind of pass it to you to give your thoughts on this land grab and what's been going on. We know General Abbott, Greg Abbott has been on it. Ted Cruz has been on it. Sid Miller was the first one on it. Big time he's been on it now for quite a few weeks. He was on it when Michael, you and I were down in Corsicana. Sid was already on it. And Bob Price, want to give him a big shout-out for Breitbart, Texas. Great man, has been helping to spread this. He got his articles there at Breitbart, Texas, all the way up to Drudge, and helped make this a major story nationwide. So I want to pass it to you, Colton, to discuss this land grab a little bit.
Well, you're right. I'm glad that was brought up. You know, we see a lot of major key players getting in this, and rightly so, but we have to remember who shined the light on this serious and detrimental issue to the great state of Texas was Sid Miller with our campaign. We were the first ones to kind of come across this when the issues in Nevada sprang up and then the issue here in Texas. Your national media was going to the Bundy ranch area out in Nevada, but the real threat closer to home was that 116-mile stretch of the Red River between Texas and the former territory and now state of Oklahoma with Rancher Henderson and some others along there that have actually lost these federal lawsuits where the government's come in and seized their land. But, you know, you look at the way BLM is structured, and there's some good informational material out on the web to really view how they operate. But they're kind of the judge, jury, and executioner when it comes to who owns your land, how long they're going to keep it, and why. And I think, you know, them just attempting to take this land off the tax rolls that folks have been paying taxes on and folks who have had deeds to this property for over 100 years. You know, I think it's just a despicable thing. But I think after the rally that was held there yesterday with the Lieutenant Governor David Dewhurst, the Land Commissioner Jerry Patterson, Sid Miller, State Senator Craig Estes, who's the Texas State Senate Chairman on Agriculture and Livestock, and then around a dozen conservative state representatives from not only North Texas on the border in the metropolitan Dallas-Fort Worth area, but all over, like Representative Debbie Riddle, who's in the Houston neck of the woods, who were up there meeting with the ranchers, the farmers and ranchers in that area that are being affected. And I think the BLM and the federal government kicked over the wrong rock and found a really mad rattlesnake, and that rattlesnake's by the name of Texas. And I think our public officials and the folks who represent us in Austin and in D.C. have really joined together and said, come and take it, because this is Texas. We didn't give you this land when we joined the Union in 1845, and it's 2014, and we're not going to give it to you now. And I think we need to stand strong with that stance and really do anything we can do to stop. And one thing I've seen as a political junkie and activist at such a young age is before the current president was elected to the White House, Texas focused on Texas issues. And then after the Democrats and the liberal Democrats took control of Congress and the House of Representatives, the Senate, and then the Oval Office. We had things like the Affordable Care Act, which is unaffordable and it's abominable when it comes in terms to our Constitution and how things are being dealt with people, people losing their health insurance, et cetera. It seems like Texas has then had to turn and put the defense up and get the moat ready to back off the federal government and those federal agencies. You know, as Michael said earlier, two of the most powerful and influential positions on the working cogs of the Texas economy are agriculture and oil and natural gas. And for for your railroad commissioners that don't do anything with the railroad, but they deal with oil and natural gas, then with your agriculture commissioner, they've got to fight groups like the EPA and the BLM. And I think standing strong, with the old saying founded here in Texas, you know, with the infringement, you know, from this dictatorship from Mexico years ago to the what's looking like may become a dictatorship here in the United States with the way that the current president is acting, you know, going and blindsiding Congress and, you know, saying I've got a pen and I know how to use it. You know, I'll say one thing that may get me in trouble with some folks, but at least President Nixon had the dignity to resign. That's what I'll say with that. I think the major thing here in Texas is we're shoring up the border and we're standing strong against federal government overreach and the intrusiveness. And that's the thing is they're upset because what we're doing is working. Low taxes, no state income tax, you know, sales tax, et cetera, pro-business, less regulations is building in Texas. We have more Fortune 500 companies in Texas and moving to Texas every day. You have more companies with CEOs who are under 35 years old in Texas than anywhere else in the world because they understand that their businesses and the employees and families that are related to their companies are going to be able to be successful and strive in this great state, and I want to continue advocating that.
Well, and it's exactly, and it's the big fight, and I'll tell you, Colton, that's why we moved. That's why we moved down to Texas from California, is because I believe it's a better fight here. I believe California's not going to stand up against they're just not going to do it. But Texas is willing to do that, and I think it's important. We got about 20 more minutes left, so let's throw it around the table one more time. If we can keep our comments relatively short so we can get everybody in. And then we'll come up to the close of the show. I want to remind everybody again, go to millerfortexas.com. Go check out his – find his Facebook. Go find his Twitter. Find that donate button. Read about it. And most importantly, folks, you know, I say this a lot. I stand out here. I do my show from my garage. And I stand out here on the back patio and I see the houses all around me. And I know that if I went into each one of those houses – the majority of those people, if I sat down and talked basic politics, if I talked the differences between big government and small government and government overreach and some of the things that were going on, I believe most of those people would agree with me. However, if I look at those same houses, I know a lot of those people have no clue as to what's going on. They come home, they're tired after work, they turn on a sitcom, they don't ever pay attention to current events, they don't ever watch the news. A lot of people don't have a clue. They wouldn't be able to tell you what Benghazi was. If you laid out a map and showed them where it was, they couldn't tell you the significance of it. So, folks, talk to your friends. Talk to your friends. Bring Sid Miller up. Bring Wayne Christian up. I'll tell you, I'm telling you, folks, these are two of the most important races, the most important races here in Texas right now because they are going to be facing the brunt force of the federal overreach by the EPA, the BLM, and quite a few many other agencies that are trying to come in and tell Texas what to do. And I love it. I just tell them, come and take it. So with that, I'll pass it to Dan. I'll let you pass it to Jennifer for a little bit more discussion. Any more questions for Colton? Pass it around. Michael, you stay with us, and I'll have Jennifer pass it to you for anything, and then we'll close out the show with my closing remarks.
Yes, I'm still here. All I want to say is ChristianForTexas.com. It's been a great show. Thank you so much for allowing me to be on this show with my friend Colton, who is the campaign manager for my other good friend Sid Miller. Folks, we're dead in the middle of a Texas runoff. This is like Texas politicking. It's not pretty, but we believe in what we believe. And I think, respectively, our candidates are the best choices for the respective offices that they're running from. So with that, I'll say thank you very much, Scott, Dan, and Jennifer, and Colby. I'll be talking to you, buddy.
Dan, we'll pass it to you.
Okay. Colton, just like you, I was raised with a shotgun in my hand. I started out originally with an old Stevens bolt action 12 gauge, and then I saved up for a few years and purchased a Remington 1100, and was a big bird hunter back when I was your age, And recently I just got myself a Colt 45, the old 1911 semi-auto. And guns I look at from a, being a history fan, I look at the history of the weapon as well as how it performs and everything, and that's why I chose the 1911. It's a hand, the first of the semi-autos, and has been used in every war since the Spanish-American War, and to this day is the preferred weapon of the Navy SEALs. So, you know, I look at it from my multiple perspectives, not only from going to the range and using it as self-protection and protection of my family. And how does the... But, you know, we're seeing attacks on the Second Amendment from all over the place. And here in Florida, we're still hanging in there. But we have the carry and conceal. And I'm sure you know the 1911 is not the easiest weapon to conceal. And it's not very comfortable sitting underneath your arm. And I'm trying to get the simple carry so I can put it in, you know, a holster. Because by the time I get the damn thing out from underneath my shirt, you know, it'll be too late to use the damn thing. How is Texas doing with the Second Amendment and... you know, where does, you know, do you think you're going to be having any problems over in your state?
Well, Texas normally leads the nation in everything, in my opinion, and being a guy who was raised on a ranch where, you know, firearms were used to protect cattle from rattlesnakes and you know, scare off coyotes and things of the sort. I've actually given many speeches next to Dr. Susanna Hupp, who served in the State House and helped pass campus concealed carry in Texas after the Luby's massacre, which is in Killeen, Texas, not far from Coryell County. Many of my mother's high school, they were in high school during the time of Luby's massacre, many of my mother's high school friends' parents were killed in that massacre, and seeing what's you know, the two Fort Hood shootings now, very close to my family's property and where I've grown up, and we don't have campus carry. It's going to be interesting to see. I've always been an advocate for campus carry in Texas, where you have the same certifications to have a concealed handgun license, being 21 or above, going through the safety test and screenings, et cetera, to be able to carry on campus and be protected. You know, the only place where bad guys with guns go are places where good guys can't have guns. And so I think that'll be something interesting brought up in the legislative session this next semester. As student region of the Texas A&M University system, I hope that that's passed. You know, we've also fallen behind open carry in Oklahoma. They passed it before we did, and I think that's something else we can get on. I don't think the Second Amendment limits you on anything. You read it the way it's written, as you do with any other amendment in the Bill of Rights or any amendment to the Constitution of the United States. You read it verbatim. Those were the words it was written. You use that exact definition, et cetera. And so I think we've got a little bit of ways to go, but I'm confident in the conservative members who will win in their runoff election to kind of turn the tide in the Texas legislature to be able to get these bills out and on Governor Abbott's desk and signed and have more privileges and freedoms reconstituted and reinstituted to the Texas people as they rightly should have.
Yeah, that's good because, you know, we're having – you know, a little trouble, but, you know, we're still set on the conceal and carry. But, you know, I like, you know, what Alabama's doing with just the carry because, you know, that's where a sidearm belongs. You know, my 1100 belongs on my side, not underneath my arm. You know, my 1911, I mean, and it's frustrating, and I agree with you. The Second Amendment starts out in order for a free state, the right to bear arms is a necessity, and we all should, in states that do have open carry, it has prevented a lot of crime. And the left doesn't understand that as they are taking our weapons away from us. But I'll tell you one thing. You aren't going to get my 1911 out of my hand until the day I die. I mean, I feel that strongly about it. And, you know, I'm going to the range probably tomorrow and do a little more, you know, shooting, you know, get my my skills up. And I've been doing it for better part of 4 years. And, you know, I want to see you being able to do the same thing, you know, is look back and, you know, you might, you know, hunting and, you know, I grew up in a small town, believe it or not, and, you know, we had open woods and one of my best friends in high school had to go out and put food on the table. So, you know, guns were literally to keep his family fed. You know, we had to go out deer hunting and goose hunting and you know, duck hunting and pheasants and, you know, so weapons from not only the point of state sovereignty, but it's a necessity and it's part of this country. You know, we need to save it. And, you know, glad to hear that, you know, Texas is still working on getting it back to where it should be on the Second Amendment, where, you know, we can openly carry and not have to worry about being persecuted for it, you know. And with that, I'll pass it over to Jennifer.
Thank you, Dan. You know, one thing that is going to be, I think, important in the 2014 election, we've got some serious issues going on with immigration. You know, I'm a big believer that we've got rules and regulations that we need to enforce. We still have not gotten our answers on Fast and Furious. You know, our borders need to be secure. I don't believe that we have a need for reform. I think what we have on the books works just fine. If we would just hold those laws, you know, to their high standards that we need to. You know, one of the things that I, when I lived in Texas, I used to talk to a friend of mine who was a nurse down the border, and he said it was awful in the hospitals because you had so many illegals coming in, and it's like they, you know, they could not say no to them when they came in pregnant, you know, and dropping babies left and right on this side of the aisle, you know, on this side of the border. We got, you know, so many people that fight for their right to come into this country legally, but yet we have others that are in here illegally, and we've got companies, organizations, you know, companies that are allowing illegals to work on their property, you know, So a part of, I think, those are some of the challenges that we're facing today. And, I'm glad to know that we have a candidate like Sid Miller that is solid on the issue of amnesty. Do you have any other comments you would like to make on that subject?
No, I wholeheartedly agree with you. I think, that if we enforce the laws we had on the books, this country would be a safer place. I think the major issue that the federal government has forgotten its prestige is one of its most important concepts is to protect the American people here at home and secure our borders on both sides, because as it's been proven by various reports, it's not just illegal immigrants from Mexico or other Latin American countries coming here for work. There have been folks from Pakistan and Iran and India also detained on the border. I think another issue in Texas that's been brought up and ward in the legislature is in-state tuition for illegal immigrants. So students who are here legally and may have been brought here illegally by their parents are able to go to school here for the same price that I pay, being a natural-born citizen of the state of Texas. Yet I've got friends in Oklahoma and Louisiana and New York and California who'd like to come down and go to school here in Texas, but would have to pay out-of-state tuition. And I think that's just wrong on principle, and I think that's the issue.
Amen.
Is that when it comes to social issues, we have the heart that of what's in this Constitution and what's in our Declaration, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And then on the other side of the aisle, they don't think logically on what it takes that somebody's got to foot that bill at the end of the day. And it's not folks who aren't on the tax rolls. It's the folks who are on the tax rolls, and they're being overburdened and overtaxed because they're having to pay for government handout and welfare subsidies. And there's just too much of a handout and not a hand up. And I think once we shore that issue up and reinstitute and actually enforce the laws that we have on the books, I think we'll have a safer America.
Yeah, I talk to people that have been naturalized citizens in the United States, and they tell me that it really ticks them off because the illegals come in, and it's the good ones, the good people, that are fighting for their doing things the right way to come into the legal way. Then you've got the illegals coming in here doing it, the sly way and trying to sneak over the borders and stuff. And then you've got others that are, helping to keep that stuff alive. We need more candidates that stand up for the Constitution. I mean, constitutional sheriff, we don't have enough of them. My hat's off to Sheriff Joe down in Arizona. We've got Rick Needham, who's running for sheriff down in Alabama. I think we need more people that are willing to stand up. I'll tell you, there's nothing finer than, this country, our founding fathers, the principles that, they stood upon and the things that they did to fight so hard to get that document written. And, they met with a lot of opposition, and then we had someone like Frederick Douglass who had to go out and do his own homework on the Constitution because people kept saying it was a racist document. And he looked into it further and found out that it said we the people, not just a portion of the people, but we the people. That means all of us. I'm glad that I was born in America. I have no intentions of moving anywhere else. I like when I call a business, I like to be able to press one to talk to somebody in English. I can't stand outsourcing. I think we have enough people standing in the unemployment line here in the United States. There is no reason why we should have to take our business elsewhere. I remember when our auto industry was we were so proud of what we had. Cattlemen's industry, we were so proud of what we had. But we got people like Monsanto's that are just turning our food supply into nothing but, chemical wasteland. And, I know that sounds a bit harsh, but it's true. looking for the new way to try to save what we have, you know. But at the end of the day, I mean, there's just so much that we need to fight for. There's, you know, the, I'm learning that the Democrats don't take any time off. There's no season in the year where they say, "Oh, we don't have to do anything." You know, it's like off season because it's not the actual primary election time for 14 or 16. They don't take any time off, and I think that, you know, that's one of the things we've got to work on. Some people tell me, you know, do you ever talk about anything else other than Constitution and liberty? And I said, well, you know, I have a 12-year-old son to think about. So, you know, I commend you for your willingness. We need more people like you willing to stand up and be a voice for our next generation. You know, and I think Sid Miller was spot on when he hired you to manage his campaign. You know, he's got a good staff. I think Ted Nugent, you know, I've always, you know, standing up, not being bashful about what he believes in, you know, and we need more people that are willing to take a stand and be that voice, you know. Anything else you want to say before we pass it on to Michael?
No, ma'am. Thank you for your support and everyone's support here, and thank you for having me on the show. You know, as it's been stated, I'm not the only one. Travis McCormick, the campaign manager for Wayne Christian, another good guy. Zach Maxwell out of Baylor, who's working with the Abbott team and the local Tea Party there, and just folks from all over Texas and all over the nation, my age, a little bit older, a little bit younger, who are active, because we clearly understand to be able to grow old and have the nation that we were taught about, we've got to work hard to reinstill those values in our community and society so that we can enjoy one day and rest and let another generation pass on what we're fighting so hard to retain.
Well, that's right, and we're up towards the end of the show, and I want to thank you, Colton. It's been great. It's been great to finally talk to you. We chat on Facebook here and there and pass things around, but it's always good to be able to talk. I will tell you this. When I was in California, I had a good friend, Josh Dieterle, when we had a rattlesnake problem. I called him to come take care of it, and now I know who to call, and I will be calling you if we've got a rattlesnake sitting out by the side of the door. I'll tell you, it's when you got three little girls and you got snakes, you always got to have somebody who knows how to kill them. But I want to just ditto what everybody else said. You know, I don't care how old you are. You're doing an incredible job, young man. And that is all that is very important. And we do have some great candidates around here. I would be amiss if I didn't ask the important question. I'm hoping nobody ever has asked you this, so I can say I was the first one. But I think Sean Hannity would probably ask this. We talked about this last week with Sid Miller. Sid Miller said you'd be ready in 8 years. Is it true to the rumors that you're going to run for governor of this great state of Texas in 2022?
Well, you know, I'm not sure if I can answer that. You know, I don't plan on running for office yet. I'm proudly campaigning for candidates and promoting good fiscal conservative policies for the state. You know, the other day I was asked if I was eyeing the House District 59 seat that's current former where Sid currently was and served for over a decade, where we've got a really liberal member in there now. So we'll see what happens in a couple years. I'm going to attain my degree and build a family and get a ranch going and get a business. And if the people call upon me to serve in an official capacity past what I'm doing now, you know, and I'll pray about it and see what God wants me to do. But I'll make sure that if there's ever a Buckley for Governor bumper sticker, that, Scott, you're the first one to get one.
Great answer, Colton. You answered it just perfect, just like all the rest of them do. Let me tell you, It has been an honor to have you on, and it's been an honor to be able to help in our own little way, in our own little corner of the world, help Sid with this election. Folks, one more time, go to millerfortexas.com. Watch the video. When you first go there, you'll see a Ted Nugent. He'll be telling you exactly why it's important to vote for Sid Miller. Go there, peruse his website, see what Sid's all about. Look at his endorsements. I tell you, Colton, the first time we had Sid on, Dan and I had him on our Saturday show. And Sid did a great job of listing down his endorsements, and it's an incredible list. And it's important because we want to keep Texas, Texas. This is why we moved here in the first place. We're going to go a little bit over. If you're listening on the Internet, you'll be cut off, but everybody that's listening on the phone will still be there. But I want to remind everybody we've got this show again next week, American Sovereignty, every Texas time, Dan Wilson, that's Texas time, at 9 o'clock Texas time every Tuesday night. We do this, and on Thursday nights at 9 o'clock Texas time, and I guess I better say 7 o'clock California time, we do Conover U with the great Rodney Lee Conover, wrote for Rush Limbaugh for 6 years, wrote for Ann Coulter, wrote for Herman Cain, in fact was partially responsible for that great smoking ad, that great Mark Block smoking ad, writes now for Joe the Plumber. He's been in the movies, he's created his own movies, been in Hollywood, been in the USA. So, funny man, we talk about politics each week. Sometimes we laugh and sometimes we cry. So that's on Thursday nights. And folks, the flagship show of the week, the most important and most highlight of my week, on Friday mornings at 10:30, Ladies Bible Class. Taught Ladies Bible Class in Springville, California, with the ladies sitting around the table for 5 years. When I got ready to move, they didn't like it. So we started putting this on Blog Talk Radio, and then now I sit at the table here in Mesquite, Texas, and they sit in the table in Springville, California, and they listen on the Internet. And we still continue. We're wandering through the Old Testament. We're in the book of 2 Kings. You do not want to miss this next Friday's episode, I'm going to tell you, because we're going to find an axe head that floated. Elisha's going to make an axe head float. So join us there as we wander through the Old Testament, learning about it, finding Christ, the Word, in His church, in the portrait that's painted in that Old Testament history. It's a fascinating history as we head on. We're about ready to bump up where the Assyrian Empire takes the top 10 tribes away into captivity. So we don't want to forget that. And then Saturday morning, Dan and I get up early enough. I'm not quite sure, Dan. It looks like I'm going to be down in Tarrant County this next Saturday, going to try my hardest with Michael doing the block walk. I've never done one of those before. I'm going to have to make sure that I get some Sid Miller stuff. I was just getting ready to say, you know, I got Wayne and Ken Paxton and Greg Abbott. I'm sorry, not Greg Abbott, but Dan Patrick, who I love, but Sid Miller is my man, and I got to have something over there with Sid Miller. So looking forward to that. I'll be doing the show, Dan, probably from that block walk at 11 o'clock Texas time, Saturday morning, Saturday symposium, where Dan and I talk more politics. We don't happen to have a guest this weekend, but I'm sure Michael will be there around, and we'll have some people. We'll just have to drag some people into that conversation that we have while I'm over in Tarrant County. So those are our shows each week. One more time, folks, Sid Miller, go to millerfortexas.com. Check out his Facebook, like his Facebook page. He's got quite a few. And go to Colton Buckley. Colton Buckley's got a Facebook page. Go there and like his page and keep up what's going on with Colton. And, folks, I'm going to tell you, you keep watching because one of these days I'm going to have that bumper sticker that says Buckley for governor. I promise you that because I'll tell you, I've watched a lot of people in my life, and I know when they're heading up. And Colton, you're heading up, and you're doing a great job. If you have anybody ever say anything about your age, you just send them to me, and I will straighten them out in a big Texas way. We want to thank Michael Smith, my friend. Thanks so much for calling in and joining us and listening to us tonight. It means a lot. I look forward to seeing you hopefully this next Saturday. I want to thank Jennifer Montrose, and we want to keep Tony the Tiger and Michael Sandlin over there in Louisiana in your prayers. It's an important fight because it's another example of the left sticking their nose into business that is not theirs and really messing some things up. Actually, what they say they're going to do for Tony, they're going to make things worse when it all comes down to it. And follow Jennifer on Facebook and follow me, and you'll see some postings about that. And Dan Wilson down in Florida. Dan, until this Saturday, we say goodbye to you. And with that, we're going to send off like we always do, like we start and we send off with Keep On Keeping On. D-Rock Country, my buddy, I'm going to tell you my favorite song in the whole wide world, because that's what we do. That's why we do Blog Talk each week. That's why Colton does what Colton does. That's why Jennifer and Dan do what they do. It's why Michael Smith does what he does, because we're not giving up. We're going to keep Texas, Texas. We're going to keep the United States, the United States. And so we keep on keeping on. Go to drockcountry.com and check out his music, some of the most patriotic music in the whole wide world. If you go to YouTube and check out his music, you go to Patriot Girl, and you just might happen to see a woman there by the name of Jennifer Montrose. You'll see her go by in that video. So keep on keeping on. Thank you one more time, Colton. This has been Continue for Truth Radio, and we are out.
That just go wrong, make you wanna holler and shout and throw your hands up in the air, wondering what it's all about. And you think that things can get much worse in a second. Oh, everything just goes south. Keep on keeping on. Whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down in time. Before the dawn, take it one day at a time. With God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside. The road ain't alone. Keep on keeping on. Keeping on, whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. I'll give you one better time. With God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside.